Hello and welcome to 10 on Tech. This show is a production of Actual Tech Media. We develop content for IT professionals across the globe. Keep an eye out for our megacast events, webinars, books, and more. Each episode, we spend 10 minutes with an interesting IT influencer, bringing you up to speed in a short amount of time.
Hey, 10 on Tech listeners, welcome back to another episode where we're going to be talking about one of our favorite topics, which is security. It's always evolving, and so there's always something new to talk about. And in my discussion today with Patrick, who I'll introduce in just a minute, we're going to talk about keeping our users safe in their browsing habits and as they use their applications on all their different devices. It is... all the time more challenging to keep them safe. And Patrick is going to talk to us about that and about what he and Slash Next are doing to try and help us there. So first of all, I'm James Green, partner and VP of content at Actual Tech Media. My guest today is Patrick Haar. Patrick, would you mind introducing yourself quickly?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So again, Patrick Haar, I'm the CEO of Slash Next. I've been in the company a little over 2 months. So excited to be here. I should note I've been in and around security for quite some time, going way back when into the 90s, managing single sign-on products to firewalls to proxy products. So excited to be here and talk to the audience here.
So I think to set the stage, it's safe to say that, as I mentioned, security is evolving faster than ever. It is, as soon as we think we're getting close to having ourselves protected, the attacks are shape-shifting and come from a different vector, and it's next to impossible to stay on top of things. And especially when it comes to helping users stay safe, who are not always the most educated and proficient at knowing what to watch for, we try and help them with that. But as the threats evolve, we have to keep them up to date too. Talk to us just a little bit about the evolving threat landscape and what sorts of new things we're seeing these days.
Yeah, certainly. One of the key reasons why I joined Slash Next, which at a top level, we're exclusively focused on phishing and phishing defense. And with that, obviously, as we've seen both directly in our labs, but there's multiple studies published out there, phishing is hands down the number one threat vector, particularly from an external perspective. And it's attacking users daily, minute by minute, hour by hour. And the key thing that we are seeing as part of that is that it's not only in email, which is what people traditionally think of from a phishing perspective, but it's happening dramatically outside of email. So in SMS and gaming, social networking, these new collaboration services. And this is further escalated by this shift, pretty significant and dramatic shift to remote working, where now that attack surface, as an example, on a mobile device is significantly increased. It's not uncommon you go from, I'm sure everyone out there, use your same device for not only your business side, but use it for personal side. And so you could go from your corporate email box over to your personal email box on Gmail. Some of you may even game. You use Discord inside of gaming. Go over to Zoom, go to Teams, Dropbox, back over to LinkedIn Messenger, over to Facebook Messenger. So bottom line, what's happened is you've seen just a significant attack surface open and back doors into corporate data, corporate finances. And bottom line, you really have to, pretty significantly protect yourself now from these bad actors.
Yeah, it's if I'm a bad guy and I'm trying to compromise systems, there is one vector, which is kind of the IT infrastructure route and try and get through your firewall and into your systems. But in that vector, I am tangling with people who know what they're doing and they're actively working against me. If I try and go through the secretary, that's way easier. And so it makes perfect sense that is, kind of the most common attack vector we're seeing these days. Do you have any interesting kind of statistics or things you guys have observed as far as yeah, you said that phishing is very popular, but also other sorts of attacks that are that we're seeing a lot more of, like SMS sort of attacks.
Yeah, again, obviously, our lens is going to be from the phishing side, but if you look at any stats out there, phishing is hands down, and it's almost dramatically, in terms of its growth, the biggest attack vector out there. And as I mentioned, it's happening not only in email, but dramatically outside of email. And in fact, there was a study done by Verizon on the mobile side that 85% of attacks are coming outside of email. So this is happening inside of SMS last year. And we have a pretty big lab department. We saw an increase from 2% of attacks in SMS to 13% this year. As I mentioned, you're seeing this in social networking. People may not realize, as an example, that when Twitter got taken down was about a month ago, that was a Bitcoin scam, right? And yet another sophisticated scam, they attacked and it took it down. We're seeing it in browser extensions and rogue software. And so as an example, Google Play got hit, a bunch of attacks were hosted on there. Again, these all started phishing. There's another area people may not realize, even ransomware, your first kind of attack point on that is credential stealing, and it happens through phishing. So bottom line, it's been pretty exponential increase since March 15th of this year, which is obviously that's correlated to somewhat COVID, particularly here in the States. We've seen a 3,000% increase. And as I said, it's not only happened inside that email, but across all those communication channels and dramatically expanded beyond credential stealing. And so bottom line, as I like to say, you have to fight machines with machines today. Because to your very point, you're only as good as your weakest link. And they're not necessarily going to go through your sophisticated IT defenses. They're going to go through that person that's on a mobile device that happens now to send their email over to their personal email to print a doc, right? That's just one example. Through that, you open up back doors. And so they're going to continually bombard the lowest common denominator to try to get in, whether that be through credential stealing, whether scare them to do something, even download some rogue software. And I think that's the important thing that we have to recognize today versus before. Phishing in particular is not just your grandfather's email, right? It's not just about being inside that email, inside a corporate environment. It's across all these other dimensions. And that's what you have to really look at.
So you mentioned machines versus machines. I was going to ask you about this. I imagine given your background in security, you can speak to this. We have traditionally done a lot of security with humans. We had, very specialized security researchers breaking open malware packages and looking at the code and figuring out what it's trying to do. And, for the longest time, that was the only way we could do it. And it seems like there's no way we could possibly keep up anymore doing it that way. What are your thoughts on that? And maybe could you expound on the way we used to do things just for those who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah. And short answer, there's simply not enough humans to apply to this problem now, right? Some of you may have watched that new documentary, Social Dilemma, and effectively how you have supercomputers sitting on the other side when you're looking at your screen. As you can imagine, the bad actors are also viewing things now. How do I use these supercomputers to then take advantage of you as a human? And again, you just fundamentally can't keep up from a human forensic standpoint anymore. You would have to hire thousands upon thousands of those folks. It'd be too costly, and you still wouldn't have enough, quote, brain horsepower to fight that. In so many respects, I would say, particularly in the phishing side, we've moved beyond what I would characterize as phishing 1.0. And this is reputation human forensics. And so what I mean by that is let's use google.com. When it was registered, over time, it built up a reputation, and you would view that as a safe reputation. And then from a human forensic standpoint, you would look and see what's going on with that particular domain and perhaps a sub aspect of that domain. As I mentioned, the bad actors have gotten pretty sophisticated. They're using machine learning techniques. And so now what they're doing is they're nesting, in this case, in the phishing side, nesting these phishing attacks in //, going very deep inside that domain. So you can no longer rely on that reputation. And so what these I characterize what's happened as we move beyond with this phishing 1.0 human forensics reputation-based approach to a 2.0 approach. And this is very much AIs, machine learning, right? Using machine learning classifiers and using machines to fight machines. And specifically in our case, our team came out of, founding team came out of, you mentioned malware. They kind of credited with creating the core sandbox, right? In fact, they came out of FireEye, and that sandbox was created so I could bring malware in, detonate it, and look at intent. And once I knew the intent, I could close off ports. I could prevent particular malicious code from being downloaded in a particular device. So it became pretty well formed. And then actually you started adding AI techniques on top of that. So in the case of phishing, as I mentioned, we're now seeing multi-vector phishing, meaning and multi-communication phishing. So I'm using all these different communication channels, and I'm using all these different vectors and different payloads to attack. So we brought a AI or machine learning approach, but rather than looking at it from a sandbox standpoint, we look at this as a big data problem first and foremost, where we take in billions and billions of transactions daily, and these come from new domain registrations, honeypots, spam traps, ad networks, hardware sensors. We're continually looking at the activity going on. You do a data reduction problem, and in our case, we'd reduce it down to between 7-10 million URLs daily. We bring them into what's called a virtual browser. So like that sandbox and that virtual browser, you take those URLs in, you fully render that page, and then we apply computer vision to that page. We provide natural language processing to that page, behavioral analysis that feeds our machine learning classifiers. And those machine learning classifiers is somewhat of like a neural network now, a neural phishing network that then determines is it a phish or not. And so we're very much bringing these fighting machines with machines. And rather than do that 1.0 reputation human forensics approach, we're now bringing a 2.0 AI machine learning approach to fight these bad actors. And that's I believe that's the only way you can do that. Otherwise, you're going to simply fall behind the eight ball. They're going to find, I'll just highlight one final piece as an example. Not only are they dramatic increase in the number of these attacks and where they're coming from across these different communication channels and the payloads that they're attacking, but we're also seeing new techniques where they lie in wait. We've seen these with viruses in the past where they might infect something. In the phishing case, they might register a domain, keep it inactive for a period of time. You then maybe they bring up a landing page next, and then finally they go live, right? So you have to be able to look at incubation techniques. And again, the only way you can even keep track of all this big data in some respects, it's like IoT aspect, is to be able to bring these machines to bear to follow how they create these attacks and then do those attacks.
One of the things I've been thinking about with regard to AI and all sorts of different areas, and it applies here too, is that there's this sort of flywheel effect where the more stuff that the /next AI has seen, the more it's going to learn and the more effective it's going to be on the next round of stuff. And so, in an even broader sense than a team of humans looking at this thing, it's going to learn and be effective against stuff more and more as time goes on. Is that fair to say?
100%. As you can imagine, this is a pretty heavy compute problem, right? Not only a big data problem, but a pretty heavily compute oriented. Kind of mentioned where you have these supercomputers looking behind the scene in that social dilemma problem. In this case, we're using GPUs. And when we first started using gaming machines. That's where we could take advantage of GPUs and the sophistication that we could apply here. But to this very point, this neural network is very much learning on its own. And in many respects, we still have, let's call it the last line, just to detect what's going on, to see what's going on. We'll still have some of our data forensics people, our data scientists that sit behind this. But a lot of times they don't necessarily know what triggered that particular signal. It's become that sophisticated in its learning model. And I think, again, that's what you have to do to stay ahead of this curve. Otherwise, you will fall behind and they will figure out a new way to get through.
So we're getting close to the end of the show here. Let's get really practical for a minute. If I'm an admin who has deployed SlashNext to protect my users, and one of them just happens to try to use something they shouldn't or navigate somewhere they shouldn't, what is the experience like for them? And how does what we're doing for them help both keep us safe and help train them to do better?
Yeah, so at its core, what we built is this effectively phishing defense cloud service, right? That then feeds, we have a mobile app that sits on your Android device or your Apple device. And then we have browser extensions that cover your PC, and we cover all browsers. It'll help you protect your PC and your Mac environments. And so from a user perspective, when they click on a link and it happens to be a phishing site, again, we have hands down the biggest database and phishing database in the world. It's not even close. We're about 2x bigger than Google Safe and 10x bigger than others. It's because of the AI techniques that I described. So when that user clicks on that link, we will block that link, right? And not only will we block it, because we also believe you want to prevent things before they happen, a la the Minority Report, if any movie fans out there. But second, you want to reinforce training behavior, because I think behavior is very, very important to go hand in hand with that. So we will block that that particular phishing attack. But second, we will tell them why we blocked it. And so as an example, it could be someone tried to take you to a Wells Fargo site that wasn't Wells Fargo. We'll say that it will actually render the screen. We'll show you the page. But second, we'll say, hey, was it an attempted credential stealing? And this is why you want to avoid it. And the reason why we do that is we want to help influence the user behavior to kind of act as a double protection barrier for any access to data, any access to the finance, the financials within the corporation. And we've seen that prove very, very effective. Unlike, as an example, I know there's other phishing services where you kind of simulate attacks and they do those quarterly. But unless you're reinforcing at the time they do that attack, it really doesn't work. We've all sat at our CBT, that computer-based training, and we're doing something else simultaneously to doing this. And so that's why we kind of take that two-pronged approach. One, block it, prevent it before it happens. Second, reinforce the behavior, right? Reinforce the training and tell them why, what they were attempting to do and what it potentially could do to the organization.
Very cool. Okay, so just by way of wrapping up here, what is on the horizon for AI being applied to keeping end users secure? And that could be broadly or specifically for SlashNext.
Yeah. So as I had mentioned previously, the attack surface on the mobile device is dramatically expanding. In some respects, people think, wow, it's iOS, it's so secure. Well, things are happening on top of that, right? In these other communication channels, as I said, and social networks and these gaming side and these collaboration services. But one of those other areas is specifically inside of SMS. Last year, we went from 2% to 13-15% of attacks. I'm sure you've gotten the, hey, go send a gift card to XYZ. This happened at a few of my last company. People got tricked to send, in this case, about $15,000 of gift cards across three different people. And that's more of a language-based attack as opposed to a link where they get you to click on something. And so what we're bringing forth, kind of taking this multi-layered defense approach, AI defense approach, not only from that cloud service, but on device itself, you'll see new techniques where we can, again, specifically in SMS, where we can block and prevent those attacks, not just in the link side, but in the natural language side. And it's pretty cool how we train this. We did, there's a lot of short messages in Twitter. There's also 800 calls and 800 call scams you can look at inside of Google. So it's become pretty sophisticated and well-formed. So we really want to prevent, again, not only the link-based attacks, but also those natural language attacks and really make you safe. And we're going to continue to do this, not only in SMS, but you'll see some other cool things as we drive forward.
All kinds of crazy stuff out there, but I think what you're doing at SlashNext to try to protect us from that is very cool. And Patrick, I thank you for coming on the show today to have this chat. It was fun to talk with you, and wish you all the best at SlashNext.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And thanks for having me. I would just say one final thing. If anyone's interested out there, you can just take a quick test drive and see how it works. I like to say, a picture's worth 1,000 words, and it's easy to download it and see what it does.
Awesome. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks for listening to the 10 on Tech podcast. For more helpful content, check out our blog at www.actualtech.io.